Welcome back, everyone. This is the Bless You Boys podcast, episode number 14. Bless You Boys is your home on the SB Nation platform for all things Detroit Tigers baseball and beyond. I'm your host, Brandon Day. I'm the staff editor and writer for Bless You Boys. And with me is my co-host, Ashley McLennan, who does those things as well. Ashley.
Makes you sound so impressive. It's just like...
Ashley also does
I do stuff. All this stuff. For Ashley like kind of does it too, I guess. Yeah, whatever. I'm just everywhere. It's fine. Hello, everybody. Episode 14. When did that happen? Have we even had 14 weeks of this year?
It doesn't feel like I'm skilled enough at this to have had 14, but...
It's super funny because I'm on a different podcast, and I think we've just hit like episode 89.
Oh, wow.
And it's taken us, I think, easily 3 years to get there. At the rate we're going, we'll easily hit episode 89 next year.
Oh, yeah.
So it's kind of ridiculous because we only release every 2 weeks. So, and we took a big hiatus, and it's also a lot harder to coordinate the schedules of five people than two.
Oh, no. You have five people on that podcast?
Yeah, it's five of us, and we do it in person. So it's even harder. So we have like a round table and like set up with the real mics and everything like that. So it's it can be an absolute nightmare to figure that out.
Oh, that's cool. You've got somebody over there who's a pro at recording multiple people and doing a professional setup. That's probably helpful.
Oh yeah, like we've got the channels and the different mics and the pop screens and everything.
Yeah,
we think cool. You know, pretty fancy.
You're pretty cool. Yeah, we're just winging it here. I wonder. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look through like how many episodes like Al Beaton and then Hookslide did. I wonder what we're actually at in terms of podcast total, but the new rebooted version, yeah, we're just
what is this like version 3.0 of the Bless You Boys podcast?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean there might have been a couple other little strays mixed in there for a few episodes where someone gave it a try back before my time, but yeah, I think it's just those three. So yep, 3.0. Yeah,
we're holding the fort down. I hope you guys like it too.
Yep, like in Android terms, we're at like. Let's see, we need something with like a C, chocolate.
Like cookie. I think it was like cookie.
Yep.
Or croissant or something delicious.
Yep. All right, before we get into it, I just want to, we've been mentioning this the past few weeks. We did start up a Patreon page. We are soliciting readers of the site, listeners to the podcast to become a patron and support our work at the site and on the podcast over at patreon.com/blessyouboys. You can donate over there. There's multiple levels, though. The James McCann tier at $1. McCain. I was thinking of John McCain earlier.
I know you were thinking Die Hard.
Yep. Oh, yeah. John McClane, like even better.
John McClane.
Maybe the best John Mick something. And then
I agree.
Yeah. We have there's a Nick Castellanos level, which is $3 a month, Miguel Cabrera level, which is $5 a month, and you can pick any one of those. There's different wards you can find laid out there. And before we get started, I just wanted to thank everyone who'd kind of subscribed over the past week. We had, we got John Douglas for $5. Thank you very much, John. Thank you, Charlie Pickering, for donating at the $7 level, and Thomas Grundahl, who donated at the $1 level. We really appreciate you guys' support. Hopefully we can keep building this thing. If you can't, you know, pledge or donate anything, that's perfectly fine as well. We will make do as we always have. We're just kind of trying to find a way to make this work for us a little bit more effectively, and also give us hopefully some funding for things like contests and prizes. Perhaps at some point we'll just have to see how it all plays out. If you can support us, we'd appreciate it. Please head over there. So with all the advertising and tomfoolery out of the way, it's been an interesting week. We're in the home stretch here. We've really only got about 9 days. 9 days till opening day.
Yeah, stuff is actually starting to happen. You know, it almost feels like baseball is coming.
Alex Cobb was signed today by the Baltimore Orioles for reasons. And
that leaves just a good
Greg
contract,
Holland.
Though.
He did, yeah.
It was a 4 years, 60 mil.
I know, which is amazing.
Which is aces, especially for the Rays. Apologies, I'm going to do this, because it means they do get a higher draft pick in that round. I think they go from having like a 75th round or like a 75th pick to like a 35th. So pretty good. We were all kind of collectively holding our breaths there. So good for Alex Cobb. Good for the Rays. Hurrah, hurrah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yep. I mean, that's a better deal than, you know, Jake Arrieta got, which is kind of surprising. Well, not really better, but longer term and definitely better than I thought Alex Cobb would get the way things were going. But
good for him for holding out, because that was the big thing, right? We knew he had offers, but he was waiting for something bigger and multi-year, and ended up getting what he wanted. Now, whether or not he's just returning to the same division he was in, so these aren't going to be surprising batters for him. He was already spending the AL East was already, you know, featuring 19 matchups against these teams every year anyway. So it may be some familiar folks for him.
Yep, familiar parks, familiar hitters, yeah, for sure. And that really leaves just Greg Holland out there, former Royals and last year the Rockies closer, who no one has signed yet. And I was going to mention we actually did our fantasy draft for the actual staff of Bless You Boys, our league, Monday night. And I kept looking at Greg Holland like, man, you know, I should pick him up. Somebody's gonna sign Greg Holland, right? Somebody needs a closer out there. What are you doing over there, Cardinals?
That was my logic with Cobb. But did you end up taking Holland?
No, I can't remember who picked him up. I was waiting because I wasn't going to go and jump out ahead. But yeah, somebody did finally just snatch him up. So yeah. At some point, Greg Holland's going to get signed, and finally, all these people will have a home, and just in time for baseball to start. I hope Greg Holland is working out very hard somewhere.
Well, he's probably at that camp in Florida.
Yeah,
you would think. All of the missing free agents have been,
working at. I think they closed that down, actually, too. So, I don't know what he's been doing the past week or so since that closed down. But yeah, just kind of like the last gasp of what has been a very, very bizarre offseason.
Yeah. So weird.
Yeah, it really has been. So the big Tigers news, and there hasn't really been too much big Tigers news in the past couple days. There's one bad thing, which was Franklin Perez straining his lat muscle, and he's probably going to be out until mid-season, sometime around the All-Star break, before he'll probably head back to Double-A Erie. We'll just have to kind of see how that goes there. Justin Verlander had a similar thing at the beginning of the 2015 season, and it didn't take him too long once he got back to get into form, but you'd expect the Tigers to be real careful with Franklin Perez. He's still their number one prospect. So that was kind of a bummer. But, you know, as far as pitcher injuries go, not the worst thing that can happen, and you kind of have to expect that when a lot of your best prospects are pitchers. So we'll just have
to... it's sort of inevitable. But as they go, I mean, it could absolutely have been a lot worse.
Yep, and that's why, there's hopefully plenty of depth there, and we'll be able to feed a whole bunch of new starters and turn a few guys into relievers in the years to come. The one, big decision that was made, and this one did kind of raise a bunch of controversy, was that Ryan Gardenhire named Jordan Zimmermann the opening day starter, to the surprise of just about everyone. Now, that would have been a
shock. It would have been a huge surprise if he'd named Alex Cobb the opening day starter.
Patrick O'Kennedy would have been thrilled. Like, oh, look, Chris Illich
pried
open his wallet and finally got us a player.
But yeah, the Jordan Zimmermann announcement was that came in on, I think, Sunday, and everyone was like, what? Are you sure? Let me check our calendars, make sure it's not the 1st of April yet. Nope. I think this just really solidifies a lot of what we've been seeing with Gardenhire, with his decisions with Martin in the leadoff. He's very old school. He's very clearly rooted in that, the oldest guy on the team, or at least the most
seniority,
established with seniority, is the guy you go to for that role. And it's not, the guy everybody wants the most. It's not the hot upstart who's been on the team for two full seasons, which is Michael Fulmer. He's looking at it and he's going, all right, Zim's put in his time. He's the guy who's been around longest, is the oldest. Mike Fiers is, I believe, no, Liriano's the oldest.
Yeah, and Liriano's actually had maybe as good a career as Jordan Zimmermann, which begs the question, why not Francisco Liriano? I mean, he's Gardy's old buddy from Minnesota. They love each other.
But he doesn't have the time with the Tigers, which, I mean, even Zimmermann hasn't been around a lot, but I guess that was the logic. He's just he's the oldest one that's been around the longest, so we tip our hat to Zimmermann. And I think it was a surprise to Zimmermann and to Fulmer that was the decision. From what I gather from stuff he's told the media since, is that he kind of got a hint of it at the beginning, and if things went well, he might get that nod. But I loved his quotes on it when he was asked, people straight up asked, they're like, did you expect this with Michael Fulmer being, the guy? And Zim said, he probably deserved it more than me, and I'd have been fine pitching the fifth day as long as I'm in the rotation, which I think is a pretty big admit to him. And then he went on to say he's got his days coming. He's going to start plenty of opening days and he's got a bright future and he'll get his shot, which, you know, it's that nice team camaraderie. And then of course they had to ask Fulmer, which I think has got to put Michael in a really awkward position where he got guys going, so, how did you feel about not getting that thing everybody thought you were going to get? And he said, obviously to say I didn't want to start opening day would be a lie. And it's everybody's dream. We're happy that Zim can lead us, being the veteran that he is. So it's tough, right? That's very much the Guardy line, right? Where you go back to the vet thing.
Yeah. And that's just being a team player. Yeah.
Everyone's being very amicable about it. So, you know, I think it's whatever. It's who cares? I'm like, yes, this is surprising, but it doesn't really matter. Zimmerman was going to pitch one of those first five games anyway. You get a lot of people kind of throwing the jokes out. It's like, oh, Tigers starting the season 0-1. But, I mean, Zimmerman hasn't looked bad this spring. Like,
yeah, he's been all right. Yep.
He's been fine and not Mike Fiers implodey. So I think we could do a lot worse. Speaking of Fiers, he's apparently having a lot of back issues. So he may not even be in that starting five at all, like we thought. So I'm curious what this means now, or whether or not we were kind of joking about it on the site. Like, we're like, yes, back injury, quote unquote, that maybe the Tigers are just realizing what a terrible mistake he might have been in that position and are just like, oh yeah, he's not feeling well, so we're gonna start Nora.
Yeah, it does seem like that. I mean, you know, I assume there's got to be something there, but you just never know, like, if it's just like, you know, he's got kind of, you know, standard run-of-the-mill back tightness, or there's an actual issue. I Chris McCoskey of the Detroit News had tweeted out initially that they'd done an MRI and that it was had come back clean, but then he retracted that they actually hadn't. So it didn't require an MRI, which, in the end, you know, if they didn't give the guy an MRI and he's having back issues, kind of does make me a little bit suspicious that this was just sort of a like, well, why don't we kind of let him throw on the side for a few weeks and see if he can kind of get it going before we put him into the rotation. But there's still 9 days to go.
Yeah, he was pulled from his next start in the spring training, so
yeah,
we'll see what happens there. We'll see if he can get something going.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Norris has pitched well. It's pretty hard. You know, I think he's got one walk this spring, which has kind of always been, I mean, that's the issue with Daniel Norris, is that he tends to be inefficient, you know, miss up and around the zone too much and kind of get behind guys, walk too many players. So, and obviously Chris Bosio has been harping on him about that, to just pump strikes in there, and he's been doing it. And for the most part, it's been working well for him. So, yeah, I mean, he's definitely the better option in my mind. So, yeah, maybe, you know, we'll just have to see. Maybe the Fiers thing is real. Maybe Mike Fiers really, you know, has some, you know, legit back tightness. Or maybe it's just kind of he's not pitching all that well, and that's sort of the excuse for the time being until we see how he goes. And as far as the Zimmerman thing, yeah, I mean, I don't honestly care that much either. I mean, you might as well get that start out of the way while everyone's, you know, like super drunk on opening day. So no one will be paying attention anyway.
Plus, I mean, it's the Pirates, so really, it's, you know,
it's not even real. It's our,
you know, what is it, like our interleague division rivals is how they've set that up, which I still don't get. I don't really care, because it just means the Tigers get to play at PNC sometimes, which is nice, because you get that nice skyline going. So if the MLB wants to make the Pirates our interleague rivals, I'm for it.
Yep, I mean, it just feels like, you know, it's a done deal, like that's who they've decided, you know, we're up against, and that's okay. I mean, I really love PNC Park, absolutely, but I hate playing the Pirates because of the style of baseball they play. And Francisco Liriano, up until, you know, he moved to the Blue Jays in 2016, was one of the reasons why, because that's just a dude who will, like, you know, give up a hit, walk two guys, and then strike out three to escape it. Like, he's just, you know, these long innings with runners on base that don't come to fruition. Like, he can just drive the opposing fan base crazy. So we may see that from our vantage point this year, driving some other people crazy, hopefully. He's having a
so just like that Max, that Max Scherzer load the bases, give us all a heart attack, and then get out of the jam situation.
Yeah, it's sort of like it's like Mike Pelfrey, but with strikeouts, you know, to escape.
Oh, I guess that's an improvement. We'll take it.
Yeah, that's better. I'm writing a fairly lengthy Francisco Liriano article at the moment, and you know, there's actually, the more I look into it, the more there's actually like a reasonably good chance that he comes back and is a pretty solid starter who gives you 150 plus innings. At what happened to him over the last 2 years, it hasn't really been anything too dire. he's always been a guy who's needed to strike people out because he does walk too many, but he's always walked too many. So he was a little bit unlucky on contact and stuff last year, and if he can kind of just pull it back together a little bit, you know, the Tigers have a pretty good defense up the middle with Machado, Iglesias, and Leonis Martin in center field. They got a little bit more room out there, which should kind of suppress the home runs. So the more I looked into it, the more I actually kind of came away a little bit more. Like, I was happy they signed Francisco Liriano, but I wanted him as a reliever, and I still think that's probably where he's best. But there's a, you know, there's a pretty good chance he's been durable the last 5-6 years, and his velocity hasn't dropped. His stuff basically looks the same. It's just has been his command. So here's hoping Francisco Liriano can be that guy and be our, you know, number 2, 3, 4 starter somewhere in there and do a decent job. I think there's a reasonable chance he can.
Firm opinions either way. We'll see how he goes.
I know. And, you know, I mean, we needed arms. I mean, anybody who can get some outs, I'm perfectly willing to give him a try at this point.
Oh, yeah. It was one of the things they really needed to pick up this offseason. And honestly, they gambled on both Fires and Liriano. So if just Liriano works out and Fires is a nightmare, then we paid, what, 1-year contracts to two guys that were not that expensive.
Yeah, I think it's $10 million combined. Yeah,
and we're still well under the luxury tax threshold. Like, they could have picked up a third guy and still been okay. So I think if it seems like a disaster, it's really not. Like, they made some smart moves getting those guys just to even test the water with them.
Yep.
So
yeah, Fires, they might have kind of pulled the trigger too soon, but I think I said this last week, like, you can't really knock them for that because nobody really saw this kind of an offseason coming. It's weird seeing guys like Jeremy Hellickson, who's been a reasonably useful back-end starter, like, you know, no one even, like, sniffing at a guy like that, just getting kind of a minor league invite, you know, like, it's like, well, all right, we're turning over a new leaf. Everybody loves the young blood at this point. The other announcement that came out today was that Ron Gardenhire did say that he intends to use Shane Green specifically as a one-inning closer and wasn't planning on kind of stretching him out for longer outings and such, which, I mean, it just, again, you know, I've been pretty good, I think, about not being angry. Like, there's no emotion, really, about, like, Ron Gardenhire and the decision-making. You know, this is kind of what you expect from him, and it's going to frustrate me at times. I don't know how he's going to get Shane Green enough innings if he's just pitching as the one-inning closer, because I think we all realize there aren't going to be that many closing opportunities, or at least there probably aren't going
to be. It's a weird choice, and I feel like for a guy like that, especially for a guy like Shane, who could really up his value this year as a trade chip, you want to show him off more.
Yeah, like give him that flex role a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, bring him in for like the 7th, 8th. Like, this is a guy who started out as a starter. He can handle some innings. So I don't know why you couldn't just use him as needed, as opposed to just being like, I hate it. I have to get mad about this. I hate the bullpen roll's sticking point.
Amen, girl.
Like, I'm so sick of this, like, oh, I have my 7th inning guy. I have my 8th inning setup guy. You have a bullpen full of guys who can be intermixed. Like, these are not guys that just need that one role. And Shane Green wasn't a closer until last year, so I don't know that we need to pigeonhole him that way when he's so clearly already adapted to longer-term relief roles. I think that's just so limiting.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like, you know, the Indians, like, you know, he can, you know, it's just the way it's set up when you have like three guys that you can trust. When they had Shaw, Andrew Miller, and they also have Cody Allen closing games, it's fine to have Cody Allen as like your closer because you've got two other guys you can use in any position and they're both dominant relievers. We don't really have that at all.
No, Andrew Miller. Still so bitter about
I know. It's worth because... it for the Miguel, though.
Oh my God, Andrew Miller has become such a good reliever.
Yeah, he's a beast.
Like, it's insane the way he paints the corners, and it just, I mean, obviously we did fine in that particular transaction, but it's still so sad to watch him do so well for another team.
Yeah, it would be nice to find a guy even kind of somewhat similar to that. I mean, it's just like, I don't know, I've said this in the playoffs the last year, like, it's just like bringing in, you get to bring Chris Sale in fresh out of the bullpen, like, whenever you want. Like, that's kind of what it's like. So, and if you could do that, Chris Sale would be murder out of the bullpen, and so was Andrew Miller. So, yeah, it's just hard to see you know, like how we're going to get to Green and give him these save opportunities if he's locked in just for that one inning. Alex Wilson has really struggled. I can't really imagine the Tigers leaving him off the 25-man roster unless something very, very bad happens this week. To go along with that same kind of like veteran deference theory, you know, Alex Wilson's kind of like the one guy that they, you know, are probably depending on. You know, they might be depending on Daniel Stump to be okay and, you know, Joe Jimenez to show some flashes and stuff. But yeah, and to go back and to your point, like the bullpen roles thing has always driven me nuts too, because I just feel like the more relievers you use in a game, the more likely it is that you're going to just turn a bad number. Like, you know, you're going to pluck the one guy out who's about to have, you know, just a terrible, terrible outing. If you've got somebody on the mound and he's pitching well and he's not tired,
leave him.
Just leave him there. Leave him alone. I know.
I mean, I also hate the Loogie thing. So that's, you know,
yeah,
that feels
people
like
people are starting to get away from the Loogie thing to some degree. I mean, obviously it's hard to use someone specifically just as a Loogie, but yeah, it does seem like, people are trying to move away from it, and I'm weary of that as well. Speaking of semi-loogies, the other piece of news is that Blaine Hardy emerged from, you know, whatever hole in the ground he was hiding and where his mustache lives, and saw his shadow, and he's back on the mound.
Yeah.
That was a tangled way to get there, but yeah.
He had some neck issues early in spring training and hadn't pitched at all.
Oh, it was his shoulder.
I think he needed some cortisone shots to get back in shape. But yeah, he was on the other day. He had a shutout eighth inning, looked really good. So I mean, that's super promising. So I'm very pro Blaine Hardy. My fantasy team name is the Blaine Hardy Boys. But that's mostly just because it's delightfully punny.
Yeah, and because his wife is a doll, so yeah, and we all like her. So.
Well, we do love Nikki Hardy. Nikki Hardy's amazing. I think my fandom for Blaine Hardy is entirely because of how much I like, respect, and enjoy his super smart, funny wife.
She is really funny, and I almost forget, like, oh yeah, she's like a genius scientist.
Yeah, like she's got like a PhD or something insane like that. Like she's super smart.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool couple. So, and we'd actually been talking on Twitter the other day, you know, and I was kind of saying like, don't write off Blaine Hardy yet, because, you know, the way that they've run things in this camp this year has been a little bit different. Like, you know, I think Shane Green only has maybe five innings so far. There's been a lot of, you know, guys working on the backfields. Liriano's been out there, and I kind of figured, like, you know, we knew Blaine Hardy was coming back, so he's obviously gotten some throwing work in. And I mean, yeah, if today is any indication, he's ready to roll, and you know, he may have an up and down, but I think you can probably at least start to pencil him in to kind of the second lefty spot, if not the first lefty spot. So yeah, it seems like Blaine Hardy is back, and we'll just have to kind of have to see, but you just feel like they're going to go to kind of like the veteran, more expected guys and let them fail before they really start filling things up with the Johnny Barbato and, you know, Ryan Carpenter maybe, and, you know,
yeah,
Zach Reininger.
Think,
those guys aren't going to get a shot right away.
I think that's sort of like the summary of the season, is that you're going to have to see those old guys fail hard before we see anything from the new ones.
Yeah, which, you know, feels totally different from every other season. This is like standard,
yes,
methodology right here. To see just how, like, Guardy and Chris Bosio are going to get along. Because, you know, Chris Bosio, like, totally comes across as, like, the, you know, super innovative, like, free-thinking, like, you know, he's been with the Cubs, you know, he's had the high...
Well, yeah, he's been under the reign of Theo, so, I mean, he's got to have a very different approach to things.
Working with Joe Maddon, and then you go to Ron Gardenhire, you know, that's going to be interesting. It'll be really interesting just to see if Gardenhire kind of is sort of hands-off and, you know, and kind of rolls with doing things the way Bosio wants to do them. But, you know, he talks a lot about more, you know, like flexible relievers who can handle multiple roles and things like that. And yeah, that just kind of clashes with, you know, kind of the old school mentality. So I don't know. They're kind of an odd couple, but I'm very happy to have Chris Bosio. I'll say that much.
Yeah. He's definitely my favorite addition this off season.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the thing that's cool about him is that, I mean, he could totally fail. I mean, some of these guys might not do anything. All this talk might add up to nothing. But he's not afraid to put his fingers and fingerprints and little paw prints on every player and, like, you know, have them specifically do something different and not be the guy who kind of lays in the back and doesn't take either credit or blame. You know, if it's going to go bad, he's going to accept the responsibility because he really is very hands-on and not afraid to kind of mess with guys and tweak things and try to get them to do things differently than they have been. So, yeah, he's been a breath of fresh air for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. I mean, well, yeah, like you said, we'll see what happens if it yields anything, but it has been really nice to watch this spring.
Yep. This was actually a listener question, but it sounds like it kind of plays into what we're talking about. We were just kind of asked, you know, where we kind of talked about this last week, actually, too, but we were kind of asked where the utility roles are at on the team right now. And this, it's kind of interesting because, you know, Victor Reyes had a good day today, but hasn't really done anything, you know, prior to that the entire spring. Jacoby Jones is having a monster spring. And I believe Ryan Gardner-Hire said today that he would really like to take Jones north. Would really like to take Reyes north and would really like to take everybody north. Like, he wants all his guys, but that's, you know, a front office decision. So we'll have to kind of see how that plays out. But right now, I mean, as far as an infielder, like if we leave Jones and Reyes out, do you feel like Alexi Amarista kind of still has the spot despite Ronnie Rodriguez's, you know, rap skills and musical ability? Which would be fun to have.
I would take that. I'm not sold. I don't know that he's really, like, this is going to sound so... I don't think he's done anything to shine this spring at all, like, to set himself apart as being the obvious guy. And
none of them
I think,
really distinguish themselves. Yeah.
No, but I think... I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, Evan Woodbury today was talking about how he thinks they might choose to do a four-man bench, which would be interesting because then you'd have room for Reyes and Jones, potentially. So I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. Like, you still got guys like Nico Goodrum, who, while not interesting, is no less interesting than any of the other guys who've shown up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's also not dazzled, but he hasn't bombed in such a spectacular way as for me to say, well, he should have been sent down weeks ago.
Yeah.
So,
and he's, you know, and Goodrum hasn't really played a lot, but he's actually, I mean, he's got like a 313, 343, 688 triple slash line right now, which is great. He hasn't played a lot, but that's definitely, you know, kind of one of the better slash lines out there. Ronnie Rodriguez has had a decent, you know, decent spring as well, but and both of those guys have those ties to Gardenhire, so and kind of his coaching staff. So you got to figure he kind of, you know, favors both of them over, say, Pete Cosma or Alexi Amarista. It's just that Amarista, you know, some people think he has a little more upside. I'm not particularly concerned with this one way or the other. Like, you could pretty much pluck any of these guys' names out of a hat and it wouldn't really change a whole lot. Amarista
That's
hasn't hit a lick.
Sort of my take on it too. Like, I don't think any of them are so. None of them are going to make or break the team. I think you're going to have a fine utility player, and emphasis on fine. Like, it's just going to be okay. Like, I think you just take the luck of the draw and kind of fire at will.
Yeah, and if you look at, like, Cosmo, like, he's the only one of those guys that's really suited to go to AAA. If I have to check the contract status and what they did with him. I'm not sure if we can just assign him or if he'd have to agree to it, but he's not going anywhere. Nobody's going to pick up Pete Cosmo at this point, I can't really imagine. So he's the guy who kind of best fits the go to Toledo, kind of be the mentor to, you know, Dawell Lugo and some of the other young guys. If Jacoby Jones is down there and is playing some infield, he can help him there as well. So it feels to me like Pete Cosma is the guy who's the odd man out, but it's hard to tell the other three. Yeah, really, who's going to make the team out of spring camp?
I feel like it should be Goodrum, just because I think, given how much drinking Tigers fans will do this season, you might as well get the guy with the boozy name.
Yeah, Nico. Yeah.
Goodrum. It's a good rum. Yeah. He like team up with Bacardi or something. Be great. See, we're helping the marketing department. It's fine.
Yeah, we're trying everything we can. There isn't, but you know, not a whole lot else really went on. You know, since the last podcast, there hasn't been like a whole bunch of news. There hasn't really been any like incredible performances or poor performances. Like Michael Fulmer, you know, has pitched and looked pretty Michael Fulmer-ish. You know, Matt Boyd has been solid enough, like not particularly impressive, but okay. And, you know, Miguel Cabrera hit his first home run. continues to hit the ball hard, but not in the air quite as much as I would like to see to kind of buy into the health thing. But you see him running the bases. He looks good. And Victor Martinez is just punishing the baseball, which is just
yeah,
kind
it's
of
been
like
great.
A total surprise. Yeah, Victor is just mashing. And, you know, you just never
like,
know.
How many home runs is he up to? Like four or five
yeah,
or something
he's got
ridiculous?
Five at least. Yeah, yeah. So
he hit another one today. Like he's just been really surprisingly good.
Yep. I mean, and you know, and to a degree, I mean, obviously his knees are held together with rubber cement and that, you know, the whole thing could come undone at any point. But it is interesting to see how certain, like, smart veteran hitters can really exploit, you know, kind of the lesser quality pitching they're seeing right now. Like, it's, you know, Victor Martinez, even, you know, Leonis Martin hasn't, you know, these guys haven't dealt with AAA pitchers in a long time, and I'm sure they're absolutely loving it. Like, Martin is just, you know, out of his mind right now, which I can absolutely guarantee you all these people who are, like, so upset that we're criticizing Gardy for batting Martin first, it's going to fall apart. Like, you can hope that Leonis Martin has a little bit of an upswing this year. I don't think that's unreasonable, but yeah, 326, 380, 565, three home runs. Like, we'll see how it goes. Feel free to play
yeah,
bets, I guess.
They'll be touting I told you so's all through April, but by the time we, like, settle into a real groove, we'll be like, we told you.
Yeah, but we won't be like that because we don't do that too often.
No, but we think it real loud at you guys sometimes.
Yeah, we do. And then other times I think like, oh yeah, I really was an ass that time, so sorry about that. And
yeah, that, like, that no, oh, we were super wrong.
Yep, it can come down to that. I think, you know, the interesting thing in the outfield is just hearing Gardy kind of talking up Jacoby Jones. You know, spring training numbers don't really mean that much, but if I'm looking at anything that I think does mean something, it's young guys who typically aren't facing hit, you know, other than AAA pitching anyway. Jones spent most of the last year in AAA and didn't really walk at all. And this year he's drawn walks. And that, so far, at least in the early going, is impressive because he's actually facing the same quality pitcher as he normally did last year and didn't succeed against. So it's easier to kind of, you know, attribute something actually going on there. We'll have to see how it goes on and whether or not he can sustain it. I just find it hard to believe that they're going to bring both of them north and find enough at bats. Gardy said today, you know, I can find these guys at bats. I have a plan. You know, maybe Mikey Matuk doesn't play every day in left field. You know, maybe Victor sits more days than we even think, and Miggy DHs and you move somebody to first. Or you move one of those
yeah,
guys
but if,
to DH, but it gets complicated, you know, and you can see guys not really getting to play that much.
Yeah, I don't know. And like you said about Jones, that's a really positive thing because that guy was way too aggressive at base with his hitting before. So that's a huge thing. But I think we discussed this last week, and I think there's a lot to be said for giving him time to get those reps in the minors and like really work himself out and get that confidence up. So as much as I'd like to see him continue to blossom at the major league level, the really big part of me is just like, oh, just give him two more months in Toledo. Just like leave him up there until summer proper starts and then move him to Detroit. So that's sort of where I'm at, but I'm not wrong Gardenhire, so
yeah, and it might, you know, and you just never know. It might not even really come down so much to his decision. Yeah, I mean, you know, you want Jones to get enough plate appearances, and I just can't see how he and Reyes on the same squad are going to make that happen. But yeah, you know, if Jones can get it going, has a pretty good start, then the thing that we have to discuss is the Tigers probably need to, if they want to keep Victor Reyes, who I think is 23, and they obviously believe, you know, has a lot of potential and could get stronger and start to turn that high average and contact ability into more power and still play you, you know, maybe an okay center field and a solid corner outfield, then, you know, it's about time to pull the trigger sometime in the next week and talk to the Arizona Diamondbacks and offer them some kind of, you know, meager player to just sign over his rights entirely. And if we can do that, then we can outright him to the minor leagues, I believe, if need be.
Yeah.
So it's probably time to kind of pull the trigger there. Like, Arizona doesn't have any leverage because we've already proven that we're, you know, we can totally play chicken all year. We don't have anything to play for. We'll stash Victor Reyes on our roster with no problem. So if you guys want to get anything out of this, you know, you'll take this AJ Simcox or, you know, whatever kind of random outfielder, Troy, you know, we'll send him Troy Montgomery, you know, whatever it is, or maybe even less than that. I don't even know if they're going to get that much out of us. So, Yeah, sometime I would look for that to happen, hopefully sometime in the next week. I think my buddy Mark on Twitter was the one, first one I saw really like harping on that, like, let's just do this so we don't have to go through this rigmarole of who's getting enough playing time and that. So yeah, I would kind of expect that to happen. There's just no point, you know, putting yourself in a position where you have to stash him on the 25-man roster when Arizona will probably take, you know, a very meager prospect in order to release his rights. So
yeah, we'll just do it. Bite the bullet. Make the smart move. Now that's asking a lot sometimes. But yeah, I think that would be the really wise thing for them to do, just so that you're not worried about it. You can deal him down to the minors and just go forward with it.
Yeah, and just, you know, make sure that way that he and Jones are getting all the plate appearances they need, to, you know, especially with Jones, to give him sort of one last year of you know, pretty much full-time reps to try to figure out his approach at the plate. Reyes is a little younger, and, you know, while I'm not particularly a big fan of that pick, you know, we're not exactly stockpiled with, you know, solid, interesting, young positional talent. So if we can put Victor Reyes down to AAA at some point and let Jacoby, you know, take his reps and maybe kind of push Martin down in his reps, that would be good as well. So we'll just have to kind of see how it works out. I am assuming that the Tigers know this and we'll make this happen. They've got to know that much. They've got that, I think.
Fingers crossed. Let's hope.
Yeah, for sure. So, and then, like, yeah, to move on to the bullpen then, you know, like, we pretty much dialed it in last week. Like, it feels like it's Green, Wilson, Stump. I think Jimenez is a lock. Had another dominant monster outing today. Was hitting 98, which was nice to see because he wasn't hitting that consistently last year. Joe just looks really good. There was a nice article in MLive. I think it was by Evan Woodbury. It usually is. And it was just kind of talking about Chris Bosio's praise for Joe Jimenez and just, like, the work ethic he showed this offseason. Like, Joe is a savage. I really wish people would stop comparing Joe to Bruce Rondon because there is nothing in common between them except they throw hard and, you know, and they speak Spanish. Like, these are not the same guy, people. So, like, you know, Joe Jimenez is an intense, motivated, you know, aggro individual. You know, you will get whatever Joe Jimenez has to offer out of him on the mound.
Yeah, there's none of that, like, show up 40 pounds overweight, slacking, and not wanting to be there. Like, it's just all drive all the time. So I don't like that comparison at all.
Yeah, Joe needs to be, like, reined back just a touch. more than you know, Bruce Rondon needed to be, like, hounded to give his best. So, yeah, I wouldn't worry about that. So, yeah, we got Joe at 4, and then you've got Buck Farmer and Drew Verhagen, who I can pretty much guarantee are going to be in the bullpen. And then you would assume Blaine Hardy if things go well. And if not, you know, we'll kind of have to see how things play out with the starting pitchers and whether or not Fires is ready and what they do with Daniel Norris. That's all going to play into that last spot.
Yeah, Stump has done pretty well, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him show up.
Yeah, that was a good, that was a solid Rule 5 pick last year. You don't generally do any better than what they did getting Daniel Stumpf. He's been pretty effective generally, and yeah, the strikeout touch looks good this spring. He's walked a couple too many guys, but, you know, that may just kind of be a bit of his MO. He's probably not going to be a dominant reliever. I think he's already 27, but he could be a very useful one.
Well, somebody's got to eat those innings.
Yep. Somebody eat these innings. Somebody
eat them! They're so fibrous. Just eat the innings.
So, as far as the Tigers roster goes, I mean, that's pretty much it. There's been some tidbits, you know, kind of steadily out of the minor league camp about some of the Tigers prospects. There's been a lot of, like, interesting little notes, like nothing major, but I'm not going to get into them because we're going to try to have Miss Emily Walden, who's the prospect writer for The Athletic, who writes about the Tigers farm system and writes about the Blue Jays farm system as well, or at least has in the past. And we're going to try to get her on, hopefully, when she's back from Lakeland, either next week or the week after that, as kind of a preview to the minor league season kicking off. And we'll kind of ask her about that because she's, you know, if you don't follow Emily on Twitter, you really should. If you're interested at all in the Tigers farm system, you can also look up her YouTube channel where she's posting clips of just about every pitcher and interesting position player that's down there. I would do that if I were all of you, and I do that. And yes, she's been cranking out the good content and just winning as she usually does. So
yeah, and she's down there right now, and she's been doing a lot of backfield stuff. So lots of really great stuff on the young prospects.
Yep, and I'm sure she's, you know, she's kind of knows all these guys from covering them at West Michigan. They know her. You know, she tends to get good stories out of them. So I badgered her the other day to start asking them about dirt. Because I just want to know. Yeah, I want to know, you know, I just seem like a weird thing that no one would ask them about that might lead to some other interesting, you know, I don't know, just kind of anecdotes. But, you know, players like different dirt. Like, you know, there's, you know, the dirt at this stadium is better than the dirt here. And especially when you're in the minor leagues and some of the stadiums aren't quite as good. I just wondered if they had any stories about dirt and where they like to play, what dirt feels good, what batter's eyes in the minor leagues feel good. So I think she's so far managed to ignore me on that front, but we'll see if maybe I can badger her into getting a little bit on that.
No more dirt talk for you.
I know. Well, I mean, it just comes down to me just being like such an obsessive nerd about like weird minutia in baseball. And that was just something that occurred to me. Yeah. So we had to do that. Yeah, I don't know. That kind of covers like most of the basic Tiger topics. Should we take listener questions at the end, or do you want to talk about?
What do we have left?
It's not like
we have a checklist, right? Like,
I know.
We just kind of ramble through this, guys. I know it sounds like we're super organized,
but yeah, I'm sure
we're faking it.
Totally shocked to find this out. Well, all right, let's go into the minor league thing, because I really want to at least touch on that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because we've been kind of hammering the owners all offseason, and I'm probably going to continue to hammer the owners all offseason, but MLB is, and this was just uncovered this week, MLB is trying to insert into the American tax bill, the tax bill that is trying to be like refinalized and tweaked, a provision that would exempt Major League Baseball from all federal labor law. And the reason they're doing this is the minor leaguers in general have gotten together, and some of them are, I believe, at least working toward filing a class action lawsuit, because minor league players, of course, by and large, are paid, you know, pretty much dirt cheap wages while putting in 16 to 18 hour days. And, you know, there's plenty of arguments back and forth. Like, you know, most of these guys aren't going to make the major leagues. And a lot of that extra effort is sort of their own sort of gumption. But by the same token, they're woefully underpaid as it is. And to see, you know, if they can't work it out amongst themselves, that's one thing. And the players union, which obviously only represents major league players, but they haven't done a whole lot for minor leaguers either. In fact, they've kind of agreed to just let their rights more or less go by the wayside over the past couple of years, especially the international players. But, you know, baseball already has an antitrust exemption. Any owner in the game has a damn license to just print money, you know, coming out of their ears. They're making money off, you know, the advanced media stuff. It's just such an ugly, ugly move to then, on top of all these perks that they have, all these advantages that are just built in, you know, beyond like having stadiums just built for your club, you know, by the local community.
Yeah.
But now they want a special exemption from federal labor law as well. So I just had to bring that up, but all this stuff is just frustrating.
No, it's super gross, and you see a lot of, like, there's some guys who get really vocal about it, how absurd it is that there is no minimum wage or no base salary pay for minor league players. Like, we see it mostly when they hit the majors, where they're expected to earn, you know, league minimum, and it's hard to feel bad for a guy making $500,000 in a year, right?
Yep.
But that's when you hit the majors, and there are dozens and dozens and dozens of guys breaking their bodies and working these minor league games that are still making franchises money. And these guys make so little. And I'm not going to, like, you know, say that every minor league team is just raking in dough, because, like, I've read The Only Rule Is It Has to Work, and the Sonoma's, Stompers. They're not, like, bathing in cash. They can barely afford to do that little, like, you know, sandwich spread for the guys. But, like, there has to be a point where you say, especially for these affiliated teams where they're running under the banner of a huge organization, that you have to say, yes, we care about these people as people beyond just the $10,000 signing bonus we gave to make them skip college to come and play for us, you know, like,
$12,000 a year. Yeah,
like, I've seen, like, the guys talk about doing their taxes on Twitter, where it's like, just FYI, I made maybe $12,000 playing baseball professionally last year, and that's appalling. Like, these guys are literally, like, hinging their entire futures on this, giving up, a lot of them going right out of high school because they think that this is, like, a chance for them. And whether or not it is, they should be treated fairly as workers. Like, it's insane to me that there's not a minimum wage in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, no one is forcing you to play baseball, and you know, they're taking this opportunity. But even from a pragmatic standpoint, like, it just doesn't make sense to put your, you know, the guys who you are hoping to grow into talent that will eventually, like, you know, work for your major league team and bring in the money and be successful. Like, they, you know, a lot of them have, you know, this has been an ongoing thing for years where guys are living like five to a crappy little dorm where, you know, they can't drink the water out of the faucet, and they're all eating, you know, pizza every night because it's the only thing they can all kind of get together on and afford to eat pizza. Teams obviously recognize that these guys don't have any money because they're starting, you know, to have chefs. They're starting to, you know, put out like a healthy food spread after game, before and after games and stuff like that. Like, they realize that they're not paying them enough to live on and take care of themselves the way they need to perform at their best and to improve and to, you know, improve their nutrition and grow, etc. So they know this. And yeah, it's just, you know, I can't really exempt the Major League Players, you know, Association from this either, because they really have kind of just like thrown the minor league players to the wolves by and large. But to ask for a specific exemption to federal labor law with all the other advantages major league owners have is just kind of asinine and disgusting to me. So
it's a little evil.
Yeah, like, it really is. It's just pushing so hard, you know?
No, let us make it legal and part of the law that we can treat these guys like shit.
Yeah.
Like, that's gross. I'm sorry. You're all billionaires. You can afford it. You can afford to pay these people, like, human living wage.
Yep. And if you can't...
If somebody who owns a McDonald's franchise can afford to pay their workers minimum wage, the people who have billions and billions of dollars owning sports teams can afford to pay minor league players.
Yep. Gonna have to agree with that. Or, I don't know, maybe they should just give it up and then everybody just goes to college and, you know, and then that screws up the entire talent pipeline for teams. You know, I mean, if that's really the avenue that they want to take, like, oh, these guys, you know, could have gone and done something else, but they've all decided to just, you know, not go to college and play for us. Well, yeah, there's a reason they did that. It's because, you know, they're trying to be the best they can be, which is what you want too. You guys have the same dang goal here. So yeah, stop squeezing the crap out of these kids to make this work even better for yourselves when you're all making a fortune. Jerks.
It's the dream they sold them. So
yep, exactly. The dream that usually doesn't come true for whatever, 90,
yeah, about 80-90% of them. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. So yeah, you know, it just kind of goes on and on with, you know, them trying to bring free agent salaries under control, all this other stuff. You know, what they did with the international market, getting those guys to the point where, even the number one overall international prospect is probably going to get like $2 million as a signing bonus. Whereas the amateur draft with the American players, you know, the number one overall player that we take this year is probably going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 million. Hopefully less than that. Hopefully we can get them to sign under slot and then use that money in the second round. But that's another topic. A topic that we are about to get to. Because, let me figure out who asked me this. Somebody asked it. Oh yeah, someone asked, you know, that this is a little bit soon. But, you know, which player are we looking for currently in the Major League Draft? Like, who do we think we want to take number one overall? It's Colors You Have. Really good BYB commenter. And as he says, you know, obviously things can change over the next several months, but right now, who would you like to see the Tigers draft with their first pick? And I
was that little shorty position player. I was into him.
Yep. Nick Madrigal.
That's the guy. Yep. That's my guy.
Yep. And you know, I've kind of come around to leaning that way as well. I really, really like Ethan Hankins, right-hander, you know, throws huge gas with, you know, kind of like an upright delivery with a lot of life on the fastball. Looks a little bit like a Verlander, Scherzer type fastball. Wow. He's got a nasty breaking ball and a changeup. I really like that kid.
You've literally just described, like, the pitch perfect, no pun intended, Tigers, like, draft choice. Like, that's 100% what the Tigers lean for.
Yep, that's what they like. It's the only, you know, the only thing is that he's a prep player. You know, he's only 18 years old, and the Tigers have drafted, you know, I think, what, three out of their last four number one overall picks have been, or number one picks, first round picks, have been high school players. So I don't know if maybe they'll want to go away from that. There's another guy, Casey Mize, who's having a monster season for Auburn, I believe, so far. He threw a no-no a couple weeks ago, throws 96. Doesn't really have that good of a breaking ball in my view, but has like a really nasty split-fingered fastball that functions as his changeup, and that thing is nasty. Like, it goes really well with his fastball. And the Tigers as an organization seem to be teaching more guys the splitter. They moved Matt Manning to throw in a splitter, Sandy Baez, both of those guys just over the past year, as well as a couple others. So Casey Mize kind of starts to fit the Tigers' profile of a hard-throwing righty with a splitter, who maybe you could project his breaking ball into like an average, maybe a little bit above average pitch. So I wouldn't be surprised that they took him either. But right now, I'm with you. I'm actually leaning Nick Madrigal, because Nick Madrigal seems like basically a no-doubt above-average second baseman. Like, it's pretty hard to imagine with the skill set that Nick Madrigal has that he's not going to come up and be useful within like a year and be an above-average player for a long time. He's not going to hit for a ton of power. He's basically Jose Altuve's size without quite the thickness. He's not as strong. He's not built like a fire plug. He's more of a scrappy Dustin Pedroia type guy. But
I mean, muscle you can build. So I'm not worried about that.
Like, and he hits for plenty of power anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I'm excited. He's the only one. Like, I'm not as crazy about prospects. I haven't been traditionally.
I know,
like,
we're all forced now.
The last year is obviously the last year's obviously kind of forced me to have to dive in, because otherwise I can't care about baseball. But it's he's got my attention. I'm pretty excited about him.
Yeah, and it's just hard to trust the Tigers to like pick another pitcher, and I'm just sketchy about what the Tigers are going to do. So I'm really leaning toward Madrigal as well. It feels like Kylie McDaniel from Fangraphs, Eric Langenhagen from Fangraphs have both really, really sung this kid's praises. He's got double plus speed. He doesn't have the only thing you can say against him is he doesn't have that good of an arm, but he's a second baseman, so it doesn't matter. He's got an amazing hit tool. He's got enough power probably to hit 20 home runs in the major leagues, and he's a plus defender at second base, and we need up the middle guys. So to me, it kind of feels like a no-brainer, unless one of the pitchers just, you know, really just goes nuts and the Tigers can't resist. And unfortunately, that's probably what's going to happen, because we know what they like.
They loves them a hard-throwing righty. It's like Tiger catnip.
It really is. I mean, I love me a hard-throwing righty as well, but yeah, you know, it's like they're desperately searching for another Justin Verlander, and those guys just don't come along. Maybe not ever, so yeah, very rarely. All right, well, let's get into the listener questions real quick. Let's see what we got here. Oh, yeah, Tim Bavamote asked, who do you predict will be the Tigers' Rookie of the Year? And we both just thought, like, oh, no. Because if you actually break down, like, service time and stuff, the Tigers might not even have very many rookies.
Yeah, Machado's out. He got it last year. Candelario hit his limits. Neither of us can really decide if Jones applies anymore. Would Jimenez still have, or has he hit his service time?
I think he's hit his service time too, because he was up there for quite a few months. I'd have to check. It's like, I don't know if there's going to be a rookie of the year. Like, if I had to pick somebody right now, it's probably going to be like a pitcher who we haven't seen a whole lot of, like, you know, Ryan Carpenter or, I'm trying to think of who else, you know, Johnny Barbato, I think has pitched at least two seasons in the major leagues for a little bit. So I don't think he's going to be eligible. So there just isn't really that much to choose from. How about we just go with this? Like, who didn't start on the team last year and isn't over 25 that you think is going to have a good year?
Lord.
I'm just going to steal Candelario right before he can even say anything.
You can't. He's hit his limits.
I don't care.
You're fine. I will pick Jimenez if we're just picking off just whatever we want.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it is.
If the rules don't matter anymore, Joe's my guy.
Yep. I do like the Joe. It's going to be interesting to see how he comes along this year, because by midseason we need him already, but we may really need him once Green hopefully is traded for something useful. Let's see. We've kind of covered the camp battle. Jacob Markle, our prospect writer, who should just answer this dang question himself, wants to know, with a crowded upper minors pitching core, how does Franklin Perez's injury affect the development track of other prospects? And that is a tough question, because we don't really know for sure where guys were slated to be assigned anyway, but we know Perez was going to be at AA. We have some idea who else would be there. Sandy Baez, probably Gregory Soto, Kyle Funkhauser, guys like that. And I just think it kind of just locks those guys in for sure. Like, Perez is going to take, you know, half the season to get back. We know Burroughs was going to be there. I think, you know, you could look at Kyle Funkhauser before this happened and think, like, maybe he should start with Lakeland for a month or so, kind of get his wheels back under him after missing most of the second half of the season. But I think at this point, they're going to kind of push him and Soto more aggressively then, get them into Erie, and maybe, boy, you just don't know. They might even move Alex Fajardo there faster than people think. You know, there's kind of been some weird notes about Fajardo, like from some scouts who aren't real happy with his conditioning over the last offseason, that he didn't really make any progress and things like that, but we'll have to see how that goes. But I can't really imagine them moving Austin Sodders up to Erie this fast. Matt Hall is probably going to turn into a reliever. Grayson Long, actually, that's not a bad call either. Grayson Long might get the call there, but I don't really know for sure, to tell you the truth, Jacob. So we're just going to have to kind of see what they decide to do. I don't think it affects things too much. I just think that you're going to see a guy like either Funkhauser, Soto, or Fajardo, whoever's having the nicest spring and is looking good and like they can handle the jump, will probably get the nod to move up to Erie. Another interesting fallout of that, though, could be that there's a spot as a result open with the Flying Tigers in Lakeland at Advanced A, and Matt Manning might get his wish and actually start out at Lakeland. Yeah, instead of starting back out at West Michigan to kind of see how it goes for a little bit. So I'm rooting for Matt to get what he wants there. It sounds like he's been looking really good this spring. Reports are generally he's been throwing 93-96 with better mechanics and better feel for the curve and the changeup. So he seems to be making some progress. It's hard sometimes to separate the happy horseshit type reports from actual, like, legit critiques and scouting. But it sounds like he's having a pretty good spring camp so far. So maybe you'll see him in Lakeland as he desired. Oh, yeah. Our site editor, Revo Jackie, wants to know who's going to win our staff fantasy league. And we're not allowed to pick Nolan, who wasn't there for the draft and managed to auto-draft a pretty darn impressive team. Although, of course, when you auto-draft, Yahoo always loves your team. So,
yeah, well, there, because they picked it. I want it to be Cam, just because he had no idea what he was doing and was, I think, just picking willy-nilly. And was, like, super convinced he was going to just crash and burn. So, because I'm not going to pick myself. Mostly because I made some dumb choices in drafting. But yeah, my goal, my votes for Cam yeah. Kaiser.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't real thrilled with my draft either. Like, I did really well early on with the bats, but I kind of let pitching slip a little bit too long because I had Scherzer in the first round. And I don't know, I've got a lot of kind of iffy arms at the back of the list, so... all right, well, I can't pick him, so I will probably take Rob. I actually liked a lot of the picks that Rob made, and it feels bad to just, like, suck up to Rob, but it's a pretty good looking roster, actually. That's pretty nasty. So, all right, I'm going to go with Rob. I will take Rob, and then we will move on from assorted nonsensical staff member questions to actual people questions. What's the best case? This is asked by David Bratz on Twitter at Detroit Fan and DFW. What's the best case for the Tigers in terms of wins? If Miggy and V-Mart had some solid seasons with good health, Nicholas has the breakout season some expect, and Candelario has a solid full season. With Zim, Fulmer, and Boyd all pitching well, what could we really do?
We're talking like best case scenario. Like,
everything went right, more or less.
70 wins. 75. Oh. If we're going to go best case, I still feel like 75 is the best we can do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's reasonable. I don't know. I mean, if everything went right, I could probably actually see the Tigers winning close to 80-81 games. I could see that happening, but oh my god, would it take a lot to go right. Yeah, I mean, I'm talking Daniel Norris, you know, has, like, a really good, like, breakout season. Matt Boyd looks like a mid-rotation starter and can give us, you know, 170, 180 innings. I'm talking Miggy is back, Victor is back, Nick has a huge year, Mikey kind of continues the way he did last year, Candelario has a good year. If all these things go well, and then you have, like, Jimenez coming along to kind of back that bullpen up, I mean, I can see the way that could happen. But my God, is it unlikely. It's just that baseball is so damn weird. Like, if you look at the roster last year, I mean, it almost seems impossible that they could only win, you know, in the low 60s. I mean, it's almost unfathomable that they won as few games as they did with the roster that they put out there. So sometimes, you know, you have a nice collection of players, but they don't fit together well. And sometimes you have a collection of players that isn't very good and something just clicks. So I'm going to try to bet on the Garden Hire bounce, just that things are new this year. Chris Bosio is going to have an effect on some of the pitchers, at least in the early going, and hopefully they come out of the gate a little hot and then, you know, can just kind of hang on. But I'm still projecting them, yeah, like high 60s. You know, I think I said 69 a bunch of times. 69, 70 seems like about right. And it could definitely go worse with a couple of extra injuries in there.
And there's always injuries. That's the thing. Like,
I'm keeping that in mind. But, you know, like, I mean, if we had a really bad injury season, this team could, yeah, could win 50 games. No doubt.
I'd be cool with 65. I mean, it's a low. I know it's terrible. It's not 100 losses. And I'm really okay. If they only win 65 games this year, that's at least 65 wins. I'm trying to be philosophical about it.
Yeah, we actually have a roundtable coming out on the site sometime in the next day or two that kind of asks that question, like, what's a successful Tiger season? And for me, like, there isn't really a possible successful season for the team. It's much more about, like, the, you know, the five or six key young players that they need to see do well, and, like, Shane Green, hopefully, so that they can, you know, get something back for him. That, you know, that those are the kind of things that we're going to be looking for as, in terms of goals. Like, I'm much more interested in whether or not the Erie Sea Wolves and you know, Lakeland Flying Tigers have good years and those guys take steps. Because, yeah, it's just hard to see much really mattering in the major leagues beside the players who, you know, potentially could be here long term. So, yeah, it's just going to be that kind of year. And we're just all going to have to deal with it. Sorry.
Bunker down.
Yeah, I'd like to give, you know, a little bit of optimism out there, but it just isn't very much. let's see. Oh, Yancey Eaton. Love Yancey.
Yes.
Excellent follow on Twitter as well. Podcast host, baseball master extraordinaire. He just wants us to talk about Jaimer Candelario and, like, or Jaimer Candelario. Damn it, they sent me, Emily Walden sent us a pronunciation guide and put it out on Twitter, and I still butchered Jaimer Candelario.
But how I've been pronouncing fires properly all day.
I know, you did great. I think I still butchered it one time. But, yeah, I don't know. Do you really feel like, you know, Candelario's going to build on last year, or you think this is kind of a year to just sort of, like, stabilize what he did last year, maybe take his lumps a little bit, and then hopefully kind of get things back in gear late in the season? It's kind of hard to tell.
I don't know. I really want him to kind of be an exciting, like, just his addition late last year, and exciting may not be the right word, but he did feel like he gave a little something, that, like, youthful pop to the team. And I don't know that he's going to be, you know, break out in a way that people are going, oh yeah, shit, he's the next JD Martinez. But, like, I still think he's going to have that kind of presence where we're like, this is a guy to watch. And I think Yance wanted to know because of fantasy baseball.
Yeah, this is a fantasy baseball question, no doubt.
And I feel like Jaimer would be a good pickup for your fantasy team. Like, he's no Acuna, but he'd be, you know, a good, you need corner bats, I think is what Yance had said. So, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in
I feel
a
like
deep
you could
league,
do worse than picking up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're in a deep league and, you know, you're kind of strapped for someone, I think, like, he's a pretty stable guy. Like, you know, in terms of his peripherals and kind of the numbers he posted last year, like, he seems like a guy who's probably going to come pretty close to his projections. I think, you know, let's see. Yeah, Zips has him basically as a 93 WRC plus hitter, which is just below average. Steamer, basically the same. I think he might be able to do a little better than that, because he's consistently drawn at least league average walks in his minor league career. He had walks at 9.2% last year, which is better than league average. He strikes out, you know, he's probably going to strike out 20-22% of the time, which isn't bad. I just think he's going to be fairly solid, but you're just not going to get the counting stats. I don't really expect him to go off and hit 20 home runs this year. It might take a little bit of time for the power to show up. But then again, you know, Comerica Park is a really good place to hit, and he might just kind of, like, settle right in that lineup and just start mashing. So we'll have to see. But I wouldn't go crazy. If Yancey Eaton, if you can get Nick Castellanos, that's what you should do, because he still has third base eligibility for this year.
I mean, if you're in a keeper league, maybe. Because this is going to be Candelario's first year really doing much consistently at a big league level, too. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really...
Because he was really restricted with the Cubs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. He didn't really play that much. And it's just hard to draw any conclusions with such a small sample. Like, he's a guy who doesn't really look like he has too many holes in his swing, actually. He looks like he's going to make a pretty good amount of hard contact, and because he's a switch hitter and pretty balanced from both sides, I think you can depend on him to be reasonably solid. But unless you're in a real deep league, he's just not going to provide anything in terms of like steals or home runs to really help you out there. And because the Tigers are going to be bad, he's not going to provide you much in terms of runs and RBI either. So yeah, I'm going to tell you to just like steer clear, Yancey, unless you really, really need help. Like if it's just desperate, you're at the end of your rope. Otherwise, give him a year. Give him a year and we'll see. We'll have a little better sense of what Candelario is going to do for us in the year to come. I already love that he posts like a little, like, you know, a
little candy emoji every time he hits a home run.
Yep, that comes across on Twitter every time he hits a home run.
Love it.
It just seems like such a nice dude. Yep. And you know, he has the right background. He has that background where his dad was owned a batting cage setup, you know, where you have like a bunch of pitching machines and batting cages. I don't know.
Oh, that's awesome. Dominican,
if it has like go-karts and all that business, but yeah, he grew up in that environment with his dad teaching hitting. So, I mean, he's a hitting junkie. He's a obsessive. So yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, he seems precocious. I think he's going to hold his own. But yeah, don't expect too much from him yet. And is there anything else of note? Oh yeah, there is one, but this one is one you're going to have to take. T-Town Astros asked Pacific Rim Uprising or Ready Player One. I have no idea. I know what Ready Player One is. I hear good things, but that's all I can say.
I have strong opinions about Ready Player One.
Oh no.
Which I shared. Well, I haven't seen it, right? It's not out until I think the 29th. And Pacific Rim Uprising comes out this weekend. Pacific Rim Uprising is obviously the sequel to Pacific Rim, which was amazing. But it's not done by Guillermo del Toro, like the original was, which helps make it so good. Which, like, Pacific Rim was one of those movies where I was like, this looks real dumb. It's like robots versus giant sea monsters. Which, now that I say that summary out loud, I don't know why I thought it would be bad, because that's a fucking awesome.
You just sold that to a whole summary. Bunch of people. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so yes, if you haven't seen Pacific Rim, go do that. But it's no, like, it's pretty disconnected. The cast isn't the same. So I'm not 100% sure I want to see either of them, to be totally honest. I read the book and really enjoyed the book Ready Player One, but the trailer looks nothing like the book. And I just don't feel like seeing a movie where they try to cram in as many pop culture references as humanly possible. Which, if somebody's read the book, they're going to be like, that's the entire book. And I know that. I've read it. But the book is really, like, it starts out at least very small scale, like having to hit a kill screen on an old school video game, or like having to, like, reenact an entire scene from the movie War Games. Like, it's very, like, cheeky about its awareness of 80s pop culture. Whereas the trailer looks like, hey, look, there's guys from Halo and Battletoads, and here's, like, the DeLorean, and here's, like, 90 bajillion references that you'll need to watch this movie 700 times to get. And I'm just mad at it. So I probably won't go see either of them.
Ooh, I won't say harsh words, but distinct skepticism, let's say.
Hey, I paid money to go see Tomb Raider last week, so it's not like I'm against paying money to see cheesy, bad movies. But, you know.
How was Tomb Raider while we're on the subject?
It's fun! It's not, like, it's such a popcorn movie. It's, like, paper-thin plot, it's good action, it's a cheap Indiana Jones knockoff, but it made enough money that I think they'll make a sequel, and I'm a huge fan of the video games, so I'm, like, a big Lara Croft fan, especially the new ones. And Alicia Vikander did a great job. I mean, she's an Oscar-winning actress, so I would expect nothing less. And she seemed to have fun with it. They used Daniel Wu in it, who most people might know from AMC's show Into the Badlands. And in that show, he's like this crazy, amazing fighter, and you get to see a lot of like crazy kung fu stuff. And you got none of that in the movie. So I'm hoping if they like do a sequel, they use him more and actually show what he can do. So, I don't know. That's Ashley's movie review corner, because we're not talking about books this week.
Yeah, maybe I'll give that a whirl, because, mainly because I was a big Angelina Jolie fan, but I actually did enjoy the original Tomb Raider movies, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. It's very, like, grab some popcorn, go in with no expectations, and it's enjoyable.
All right, let me just wrap a couple things up. There's a couple notes here, and I don't know if we'll end up writing about these, if there's enough kind of to hit on them, but just because I noticed a couple things over the course of the day, there were kind of two things that have happened recently, which is like Ron Gardenhire. The Tigers have basically just been kicking the ball all over the ballpark over the past week, and Ron Gardenhire apparently was just dropping F-bombs and lit into him the other day. So that will appease some people who, you know, are really hoping that, you know, he's Mr. Fire and, you know, is all over these guys and hounding them to play better. You know, playing fundamental baseball is especially key when you're not particularly talented. So, that is part of the role that Ron Gardenhire is brought in to handle, is to get these young guys to kind of play the game solidly, to play with strong fundamentals. And he's at least, you know, bringing it up and upset about it. But we haven't really seen any results yet. It's been a little sloppy out there. And then the other thing, and this one is the kind of thing that maybe I will touch on, is that Michael Fulmer has definitely shown off a slower slider this spring. He's definitely been working on that, trying to get more depth on it. And this is sort of the key to Michael Fulmer becoming like a true ace, like a legit, like striking out a batter per inning, going 200 innings. If he's going to become that kind of guy, he does need more strikeouts than we've seen the first two seasons, even though he was very good. And that new slower slider, which is more like 85, 86, seems to be more effective. It seems like guys are taken by the separation between the speed of that and the speed of his fastball, and they're whiffing on it a little bit more. And so that's something to watch for as the season starts, because if he's got that going, and as long as he can stay healthy, which is, of course, the key thing, Michael Fulmer is going to have a big, big year. And hopefully the Tigers won't trade him, because I'm really starting to be sketchy about that too.
I really want him to be part of the rebuild.
So do I. I mean, you have him, and if Norris or, I mean, you kind of have to wait. I just wish, like, just wait this year. If Norris or Boyd takes a step forward, you've got two guys, you've got a host of pitching in the minor leagues, and you have a very low payroll by the Tiger standards, and you can build from that, especially having the number one pick. I don't think you need to trade Fulmer at that point. Now, if, you know, Norris and Boyd struggle this year and it doesn't really look like either one of them's ever going to get it together, then you're probably pushing the timetable back another year or two to 2021, 22 before you can really even expect this team to, like, have a fighting chance of sneaking into a wild card spot. So we'll just kind of have to see how it plays out this spring. But, yeah, I mean, it would really hurt to trade Michael Fulmer. Like, I'm just not very comfortable with this front office getting enough back for him. So maybe that's really my problem. Like, if Dave Dombrowski was going to trade Michael Fulmer, maybe I'd feel a little bit better about it, but I don't feel very good about it.
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
So everybody just chill. In other news, and this is pretty the last news item, is that, of course, Bark in the Park will be back twice this year. And really,
yes,
we would like to both, I think we both agree with this, we would suggest that the Tigers do Bark at the Park every damn day, because they are going to need to help to pack some people in there. I looked at opening
day. That's what I said, 81 games a year, Bark of the Park.
Yeah, if you're out there thinking about going to opening day, you can still get tickets. And that is not the case normally, so yeah, take advantage if you can. So that's going to wrap it up this week. We'll be back next week, possibly with Miss Emily Walden. I don't know, maybe we'll bring Rob in. I haven't even thought about that, but maybe Rob would like to get back in here.
Who?
Yeah, I don't know, that Rozhacki fellow who runs everything and tells us what to do.
All right, our boss.
Yeah, the smart guy.
That guy.
The doctorate. Yeah, that guy. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. We'll have some extra things coming up for you once the season starts. But until then, we will bid you adieu. You can follow Ashley at 90 Feet From Home on Twitter. You can follow myself, Brandon Day, at Fiscadoro74 on Twitter. And we will see you on the other side with just days left till opening day. Ashley?
Bye.
I think we fulfilled our obligation, as I believe Carson Sestouli puts it. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.